the fox, I am the bandit Joaquin. There is no use to wonder why. My reasons are my own. The hatred I feel for the Anglo blood lies deep within my bones. My segundo is three-fingered Jack. He cuts off the Chinaman's ears and wears them like a necklace around his throat. He's a man who knows no fear. The fools up there who make your laws, they are lawyers, they are thieves. They want a devil they can blame, and walking is what they need. So I'm the ghost of El Dorado, but the blame is on their heads. At night when her feet shake the ground, they tremble in their beds. I am the bandit Joaquin. I live in the wild with the bear and wolverine. Over hill and valley, I fly as in a dream. I am the ghost, I am the fox, I am the bandit Joaquin. Captain Love and his ranger band, they said they took my head. The fools rode into a stranger's camp and they left the wrong man dead. And others say I never was, I am a dream of what could be. But even if I had never lived, you would have invented me. I am the bandit Joaquin. I live in the wild with the bear and wolverine. Over hill and valley, I fly as in a dream. I am the ghost, I am the fox, I am the bandit Joaquin. I am the ghost, I am the fox, I am the bandit Joaquin.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And as I said earlier, we welcome phone calls. We have Mr. Dennis Geese here and Mr. Frank Holman. And if anyone would like to call us and ask any of us questions, please do. You can call 539-1069. And I think we'll start with you, Frank. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you want to be a commissioner in this county, why you think you're qualified to do it.
Well, I am Frank Holman, and I have been in the area for all of my life. I left for a while because of my job, but I've returned home. I'm retired, have been for 5 years. I'm currently ranching, and having returned back to the area, I've had a number of people approach me about running for commissioner, and at first I wasn't too sure I wanted to do it, and then I started attending meetings and realized that I do in fact have something to offer. I can do the county a lot of good, and I believe that I can really help guide us in the right direction.
And what's your business background? Because running a county is like running a big business.
Yes, it is, and I had 33 years with the Department of Transportation and managed as many as 270 people and large budgets, $22 million.
Well,
I was in the management positions for 13 years, I believe, and I've managed large equipment fleets and large buildings, many, many buildings. I know about renovating buildings and taking care of them, maintaining roads and equipment, all of the things that go with that. And I've had a lot of training and people skills. I have good people skills naturally, and I've had training to enhance those skills. I believe that I can just step in and do the job and do it well.
Okay. Now, living here all your life, you're probably aware that there's problems here and that you're going to hear from the people that you make unhappy. You think, and you're going to hear from them a lot. You think you can stand up to all that, to all the political pressure and all the backstabbing and everything that's going to happen here? And you're getting it already just running for commissioner.
You bet. I can do that. I've been through some of that, and with the people skills I have, I've been able to manage that very well. I'm ready for it. So, yes, I can do that.
Right, how's your wife feel about you disrupting your whole family to try to save this county?
My wife is very supportive of anything I do, although I do believe she'd rather I stayed retired. But she understands the need, and this isn't something that was on my list of things to do, for sure. But I know that my skills are needed, that I need to take my turn at this thing, and I'm ready.
Okay. Well, I wish you all the luck in the world.
Thanks.
I mean that as your friend. Dennis, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you come from, and why you think you want to be our commissioner.
Well, I think as your listeners have spent some time reading about us, you know that
well, you guys have made the paper. I mean, I feel humble. I mean, the most I ever had was 5 letters in one day slamming me. I mean, I can't hold a candle to the two of you.
Well, we've had some great support, and that's what's been the fun part of this campaign is a lot of people that Frank has known and he's introduced me to, and I've introduced to some people. We just had great support, and so it's been a real experience in all the things I've done. But anyway, I've been in Chaffee County for about 30 years, not about 30 years, just a little over 30 years. I was down in Cotopaxi for 7 years, taught down there, and I actually came from southeastern Colorado, so I've continually moved upriver. I'm not going to Leadville. I'm going to stay in Buena Vista.
Leadville's nice in July and August.
Yeah, that's almost summer.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, I had the opportunity to come to the Buena Vista School District in 1978, and I came as the assistant principal athletic director, and I was that for 10 years, and then I became the high school principal for 6 years. Had the opportunity. I really, truly enjoyed being high school principal. It was a great time. I loved standing out in the hallway and talking to kids and asking them things like, did you dress that way or did your mother do that for you? You know, and is that your natural hair color? Or I've never seen purple, but, you know, and so those are the kinds of things. I just really enjoyed being around kids and all the types of things, and I've had a lot of former students, both in Cotopaxi that live here in Chaffee County now, or those who went through school and in the Buena Vista School District, living all over Chaffee County, being here and just saying hello. So that's great. The last 11 years of my career at Buena Vista was as superintendent. As I said, I got the opportunity to do that, and I felt like it was a good move. I came in behind a great superintendent by the name of Leon Smith, who kind of brought the school district together after we had kind of a fiasco with one of our superintendents and stealing money. But we had a great staff and great people, and you know, we kind of started a little bit rough, but we had some financial problems, but we worked through that. The reason why I want to be county commissioner is that I just feel that the leadership that needs to be in county government, it's the most influential position in local government. You have your town councils and mayors, but really when you talk about county government, your county, your commissioners are the most influential that affect daily lives of people, and it needs some great leadership along that line, and that's what I think I can bring to the Chaffee County.
Well, I hope so, because I can certainly say I'm not too happy with the current administration. There are some serious issues here, and I hope that you guys can deal with them. And, I mean, tell me what you want to deal with. What do you want to change? And, Frank, how about you telling me what you think needs to change from what we have right now? Like, so I'm told, and I read in the paper, we have a lot of money in the bank, so the county's in good shape financially. But what I've found with a lot of people that I talk to, they move here because it's so beautiful. And then they find out they can't afford to stay. And a lot of good people, you know, come and go. And what are your thoughts as to how you know, we can bring good people in here and have it so they can make a living and they can have a good standard of living.
I believe that we do, in fact, have a nice budget surplus right now, and we appreciate that going in. But we're also at a crossroads in this country with the economy doing what it's doing, and we need to be very careful how we spend our money. And to do that, we need a plan, and we need a good, solid plan. And Dennis and I are both planners, and if elected, the county's going to have a team that's just exceptional, in my opinion. I think I've gotten to know Dennis over the past few months and really respect him and his stand on the issues, and we really, really will work well together. So I believe that the citizens of this county have an opportunity to elect people, two people with extensive experience that's going to benefit the county, and we hope they make that choice. With the plan, our first and foremost, the emergency services is what we see most important in the county, and that's the ambulance and fire services and police and the infrastructure. And in our opinion, those have not received the attention they need.
Yeah, well, there's one thing that I'm very well aware of from many people that I've spoken with is our jail. It's maybe the biggest liability that we have. We've had two deaths in the jail in the last few years, one of them just last June, and all under suspicious circumstances. Everyone says that the jail is grossly understaffed, they're underpaid, and they're undertrained. But yet we've got a huge surplus of money. What do you guys think we can do about changing that?
Well, I think that's the big issue that Frank and I really have focused on is that we believe that the county government needs to get back to the basics and what people expect. And what people expect from county government is good service. Mm-hmm. And most certainly their most primary is their EMT or emergency medical, their sheriff's department, and the fire department. And one of the things that we have found in what you just pointed out about the jail being understaffed and undertrained is another issue that we've looked at. We need to make sure that our fire departments, we were talking about GPS systems the other night with a group of people from Macy and Terrell, the ability for them to react to that and get there. Most certainly, one of the things that Frank has talked about, and I certainly agree with, is just what he talked about, is training. And whether that's customer service training or training with the sheriff's department or whatever, and we need to put our money where, quote-unquote, where our mouth is. Either we walk the walk or talk the talk or whatever, that all goes there, but we need to do it. If we're going to say we want to have good service, health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of Chaffee County, that should be our major focus. As we looked at, and as Frank knows and his experience, is that you have basic things. When I was superintendent of schools, we knew we had to have some basic things. We need to have reading, writing, and arithmetic and computers and everything else. And so that was the core. We spent our money right there, and then we went to the outer circles of areas. And that's the same thing as Frank talked about as a plan. We need to sit down and say, okay, what is our greatest needs, and where should our focus be, and what are the primary things that the citizens of Chaffee County want from their county government, and focus on those and then move from there outward.
In talking to people while you've been campaigning, what are people telling you? I mean, I know personally that there's a lot of things lacking, but what are they telling you? I mean, Frank, what are people mostly saying? We want you to be commissioner so that we can have what?
One of the huge concerns that I hear a lot is growth, and people would like to see growth controlled and less growth and all of those things, and we need to keep in mind that if we don't grow, we die, and we understand that. We need good growth, and we're currently working on new zoning and some of those things that will help direct the growth in the county and make it better.
Now, one of the things that brought me here, certainly, and a lot of other people, is all the beautiful meadows and the cattle and the pastures. Do you see any future for ranching in this county?
I do. Being a rancher, I know that it's difficult at best, and there's really not much money in it. It's simply something that you have to have a love for, as you well know.
That's why I do it, because I sure don't make any money out of it.
Absolutely. It's a sacrifice.
Yeah.
And you look at the old families here, the Everetts and the Cogans and the McMurrays and the Hutchisons and all of those people. There's many of them that have eked out a living all these years, and it's been tough. But they do it because of the love they have for the land and the love they have for the life. And we need to recognize that, support them, and help them in any way we can as government. None of them want to be subsidized or anything like that, but they'd kind of like government to get out of the way. And as county commissioners, we'll make sure we do that, and we will help them where we can and help them protect their water and their rights. So, yes, we absolutely need to keep those folks here. That's what draws the tourists here.
Mm-hmm. That's what brought me here.
Absolutely. And while the economy for the ranchers is, from a business perspective, it's just not a really good thing. But most of us supplement our ranch habit with outside work and income. And in my case, I have a retirement check, and my wife works too, just to do what we're doing, and it's just something you love. So we all need to recognize that in this valley, and I think we're well on our way to that in the different focus groups I've been involved with for 2+ years now. I've been very pleased to see that everybody seems to recognize that we need to keep these things viable and help them out. And I've been working on some issues. One of the things that's going on countywide is conservation easements to protect mm-hmm. the ranch lands. And I do have some unanswered questions and concerns about those. But I've recently learned about a rolling easement, lease easement that California has. And it is on a 10-year basis. And that may be a bit long. I think 5 years would be fine. But there the ranch would be put under this easement for 5-year periods. And the rancher would know they had a steady income from that. And that would protect the water and the lands.
Where does that money come from, though?
That would have to come from either privately funded things, or there's currently a proposal statewide to allow counties to increase sales tax to fund conservation easements.
Okay.
And rather than regular conservation easements, or in addition to, I would guess, I would really like to see us do something about this rolling thing to where it's not forever. That's one of my huge concerns. The forever thing is too final. It's an influx of money one time for the rancher, and then they're right back where they were, and life's just too difficult. They can't make it.
Yeah. No, I agree. Dennis, how do you feel about it?
Well, I agree with Frank on that one, and we did a lot of work in talking with people about conservation easements. But to move on to a couple of things, because I think Frank covered it very well, and I don't know that I could add anything more to what he said, because we feel exactly the same about conservation easements, and we feel that they're good, but we need to, the problem is a double-edged sword. They're forever, and that goes both ways. And so we need to look at that, and maybe this new approach might be. But I think some of the other issues, going to your question, is Frank touched a little bit on it, but it's water, and the second one is the economy.
Do you think you can keep the water in this valley? Because I feel if you don't, we're going to dry up and blow away.
Well, you have to understand some things already. Number one is that water is a property right, and so the county, as county government, really can't control that. The Upper Arkansas Conservancy District, we have to work hand-in-hand with them. And I think that's crucial. That has not been one of the key points of this current commission, is working with them.
Now, that's not what I hear.
Well,
I hear that Mr. Mallett is very well informed about water issues.
Well, that's great. I'm glad that he is.
At least that's what the paper says.
Well, I think working with them, and here's the other issue that we need to be understanding, and we talked about that. As long as we were talking about conservation easements, I was talking with a gentleman the other night that's a big part of that, and when they do go into a conservation easement, they want the water. But what we find in Chaffee County is that we have, as Frank named, half a dozen families that control a lot of water. They own it. But there's a lot of other people that own an acre foot or 2 acre foot or whatever. And the metropolitan areas are, you know, they got guys working 24/7 on trying to get water rights.
Yeah.
We need to be on the list. And working with the Upper Arkansas Conservancy District and approaching water owners and say, you know, if you have any desire to sell your water, let us get the first right of refusal. Yeah. When I say us, Chaffee County or the Conservation Trust or us working with the Upper Arkansas, we need to save the water. Just as a quick point is that I'm sure that everybody's aware of a study that just came out in the last couple of days that said Colorado's temperature is going to go up 2 degrees in 25 years in 2025 and another 2 degrees in 2050, which doesn't sound like much, but what they're talking about is that the snow melt and that we're going to start relying more on rain for our water than we are snow, and that's huge. The last thing I'll just talk about for a couple of seconds is the economy and how we can affect or not affect economy. What we have to do as county commissioners is make Chaffee County business friendly.
Sorry to interrupt you, Dan.
Sure.
Pretty much anybody I talk to, they're fed up with all the permits and the building department and all the hoops that you've got to
jump through. And the favoritism.
Yeah. Now Jay is a builder. He's a contractor here, and they just make it so difficult and so expensive.
Yeah. When I didn't get a chance to say that, but I'm kind of like Frank. I have a hobby. He ranches, and I do excavation work.
Okay.
And it's a business, but it's really a hobby because if it was a business, people would expect me to make money at it. And so.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. So, but when I first decided to run, and when it first came out, and I work with three great builders they're excellent builders and do a good job. I mean to tell you, I went to all three sites because I had to be at all three and it was an hour each time, and the discussion was about the building department. And it's customer service, and we need to, and hopefully, and I know the people there, and if any of them are friends and relatives listening tonight, they're nice people, and they want to help, but it needs to be how can I help you and work forward. And I had that discussion today about plans and how quickly they can go through the building department. The town of Buena Vista is actually looking at hiring somebody to do their own inspections and their own building permits so they can get them through quicker. And
they'd be able to bypass the county?
Well, I don't think they can, but because the county still has that inspection. But if they decide to do their own inspections, but what they're trying to do is speed up the process.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to give you an example. You talk about economy. A good friend of mine and their family started a business 5 years ago. And it's an online business that sells sporting goods equipment like Columbia, backpacks, Jay, and, you know, the whole thing.
Okay.
And so, but there was a $100,000 business run out of their garage. This year they're projected to do $5
million. Wow.
And they built a 13,000 square foot building. And, you know, they actually brought in FedEx to Buena Vista because they were shipping so much stuff. FedEx decided to put a depot there. They're using UPS now, and there's an advertisement. I'm not going to go into the whiteboard and all that stuff, but the point is that business has spinoff. They have 13 employees. They were over 6 weeks trying to get an answer from the building department. And anybody that's in business knows time is money. When you're borrowing money and you want to expand your business, and you've got that capital outlay out there, you need to get in and start getting a positive side of cash flow. We need to make sure that businesses, and we've heard stories just like you do, this business didn't locate here because of this and that and whatever, but we need to make sure that Chaffee County is open for business, and we don't give up the farm there. There's rules and there's good reasons for them, but we need to make the process not brain damage.
Well, yeah, and that's what we've got here now.
So.
And we've had years of it. And I mean, I'm the first one to raise my hand and said, we got to change this.
Yeah.
We live in one of the most beautiful valleys in North America. I mean, we really do. It's why I came here. But boy, we've got some social issues. And we need to work on that. Oh, I better read this. Forgive me, guys. The views expressed on this program are those of myself, because I get a little carried away with how I feel about how things are run.
Thanks for sharing that with us. We have never known that.
Well, anyway, just to cover my butt and Cahen's before I get too carried away with myself, the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Cahen staff, volunteers, or board of directors. Well, when I get carried away, I get emails. So.
And you might also open up the invitation to the other candidates, too.
Oh, and yes, by the way, since Dennis and Frank are here, I do want to invite, and I will do this officially here either tomorrow or by Monday, for Mr. Mallett and Susan Bristol to come on, too. Because since you guys have been here, I certainly want to have them on and get their views. Now, I don't know Jerry very well, but he certainly is a personable man. But the job that he's done, things need to change. And I hope that that happens. Now, Mr. DeMay.
Yes?
You've just been sitting there quiet with a smirk on your face. Contribute.
All righty then. What I would like to see accountability, and are you guys having a fight?
Okay.
No, he just needs to watch.
You'd
his
think
bikes.
I'd be better at this by now, but
we would think, wouldn't
you know?
Because each person has a different level in it. Some of them go red line.
That's right. Some of us sound like we're whispering to you folks out there, and some of us sound like we're screaming at you.
Okay. Well, talk at the John's, same level that those
John's,
guys are talking.
John's not paying attention. Speaking of running things smoothly, we could use a good engineer in here. Anyway, what I was going to say was is that the bottom line for me is that the county commissioners are very influential, as you said, in the county, and they are the responsible ones, in my opinion, for everyone under them, just like you would in any corporate CEO or CFO, we're going through right now with Wall Street and whatnot. Somebody has to be held accountable. Right now, it doesn't seem like there's any accountability or transparency in our county government, and there should be. If a mistake is made, like I believe was made in our jail with the death of Bob Eggert, it should have been admitted, and the people would have forgiven a mistake, but not a cover-up. People don't like cover-ups. People don't like non-transparency in government. We'd like to know how our money's spent. We'd like to know how things are going, and we'd like to know we have a voice to praise or complain or to take to task those who work for us. And what I want to see, and not just in local government, but in national government, and I just want to see accountability and back to the way it used to be and get rid of the good old boy club and do what's right because it's the right thing and say what is because it is and not try to make it something that it's not. People working together to solve issues and problems instead of just complaining and arguing over it. And not getting things done. Finding out what the issues are, finding out what business needs, the ranchers need, find out what their needs are and what their problems are and see if they can be resolved. And I think that goes for all levels of government from mayors on up. But I think this is an important position. And I think it's the most important in this county. I don't live in this county, by the way. I have to be truthful. I live in Fremont County. But I do a lot of business in this county, and I'm in this county every day, 7 days a week. So I work in this county, and I buy and sell in this county and conduct a lot of business here. So it's important to me that, and I don't do any of that in Fremont, by the way. I don't do any of that in Fremont, hardly at all. A little bit, but not a lot. 80% of what we do is in this county. So to me, it's important to know that whoever's in charge is in charge and is really paying attention to the needs of the people and that they're going to work for the folks and not themselves or just their friend. And I've seen some of that. And
do you think that happens here now?
You think, John?
Now, what are you all laughing at?
let's talk about accountability for a second.
Yeah, let's do that.
You know, one of the things that I felt like when I was superintendent of schools, and I would bring that to the county, is every once in a while, something wouldn't go right at the school. And every once in a while, it would be an employee, whether it was a custodian, a bus driver, a teacher, a principal, and on occasion, the superintendent would not make a great decision. And I always kind of felt this way, is that buck stopped at my desk. And my chair was actually red to remember that I was on the hot seat all the time. And as a county commissioner, you have to be the same way. You have to hold people accountable that work for the county. Obviously, we have some elected officials like the sheriff's department, the county treasurer, the assessor, and the county clerk's office, and they're responsible for their staff. But yet we need to be, and I think Frank will talk a little bit about this, is training and customer service. But, you know, when people don't feel like they've been treated fairly, it doesn't matter what the system has tried or not tried. But if they walk away from any situation and feel like they've not been dealt with fairly, then they come up with an attitude or a feeling that county government is not fair. And I've had that. I mean, I always tried to believe is that no matter what that individual had an issue with the school district, I was always going to treat them as fairly and with courtesy as I possibly can. And I tell you what, every once in a while, it was a hard task because they were really upset. But I always kind of felt, and I had some of my biggest critics tell me after I retired, is that we always felt like we were dealt with fairly. And I would bring that to county government. And I know Frank would believe the same thing. And there's going to be issues, I'm going to guarantee it.
There's going to be a whole lot of issues.
But there's going to be issues that people are not going to agree with or not. But I know that when they come before the county commissioners, and if we're there, they're going to be dealt with fairly and with respect. And whether they agree or disagree, we're going to make every effort to do that.
Congratulations. I certainly hope you're able to do that.
Is that one of your reasons why you decided that you were someone to run for this office?
Well, you know, and I... Position? What this whole thing about campaigning is hard for Frank and myself, and I don't say this to be, you know, I have not been, and I know just enough about Frank, is we're not people that brag about what we did. We just go and do it. And so the things that I'm telling you is not because I'm trying to brag about it. I'm just telling you what people say and what how I try to deal with people. And so I feel like that no matter where you're at and who you are, whether it's county commissioner meeting you on the street, run into you with my car, I want to treat you fairly.
Or arrest you in the street.
But I'm going to treat you fairly and up front and do that, you know. So that's just my nature. That's how I was raised, and I believe that. Yes, I'll get mad about some things. There's no doubt about it. And I've thrown some things every once in a while, but it's been by myself, and I've got over it.
That makes two of us.
Yeah. So I don't want to dominate. I think Frank has some great issues on that, and I think he needs to tell you about them.
And I think one of the things that good leaders need to do is empower people who work for them. And I've noticed recently that there's some micromanaging going on, and I don't like to do that. I don't do that. It's a waste of everyone's time. If you have committees appointed and those kinds of things to do a job, you empower them to do it. Make sure that you're all on the same page. Mm-hmm. Hold them accountable, but let them get it done the way they want to do it.
I have the absolute same philosophy.
Yep.
I mean, I really do. You hire intelligent, qualified people that know the job, that want to do the job. You pay them well, you treat them well, and you let them do their job.
I agree. And Dennis does, too. And we will. We'll let them do their job and get out of the way. And it's frustrating to them to have you meddling in what they're doing. And it's a waste of your time and energy.
Right, you do need to oversee some things, though.
Hold accountable.
To make sure that, yeah.
And initially, we'll be very involved. in many things.
And do you guys realize that to do this right, you're looking at a 7-day-a-week job?
Yeah, that's I've done that for years.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
is no that big. All it is? It's just 7 days?
Yeah. Well, we get a day off, apparently.
7 days a week, 24 hours a day. To really do this right, you're going to have to dedicate 4 years of your lives.
But you know what? If you have the right people in place and they know what they're doing and you let them do it, it's no longer going to be a 7-day-a-week job.
Yeah, but
I'll guarantee you.
Oh, no, I know. When you've got them in place, but we don't have that right now.
Well, I think we've got the ingredients. I know a lot of the county employees, and they're many, many excellent people. Mm-hmm. They just,
absolutely.
Just
there's
need
only
to be.
There's only a few.
Yep.
I agree with that.
And that is true, and we recognize that, and both of us have worked with so many people. We know how to understand their needs and spot training needs and all of those kinds of things, and I think we can really guide them in the right direction. We will be supportive. I believe our job is to make sure all these people have what they need to get their job done. It's not to be bossing them around. So that's how we'll approach this thing and make sure they're... I do believe that many of them are probably underpaid, and they need to be paid very well.
I think most of them are underpaid,
yes.
And especially our teachers. Now, I don't know if you know her, Dennis, but I have a very good friend who was a teacher here for about 25 years. She just retired. She didn't even get a gold watch or a goodbye or anything. And was probably one of the best teachers this school system has ever had. Grossly underpaid. Now, tell us what you guys want to do about improving our schools and how we're going to pay for all of that.
We, as county commissioners, we will only be there in support of the schools. We don't have control over those budgets. I, for one, will vote for the teachers' increase in salary. I think that's absolutely critical. They need to be paid better.
Yeah. Even with what it'll do to your taxes.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And I'll probably vote for the others, too, because I think the timing's awful. We're in a terrible situation right now. And I don't want to pay any more taxes. But I also recognize that we cannot let this continue.
No.
We've got to fix some things.
And I think, like I said earlier, you know, people come in here and then they can't afford to live here.
Mm-hmm.
And our teachers are one of them that can't afford to live here.
Yes. Well, you know, one of the other things that really, you know, you talk about budgets and spending, and who watches the purse strings? I can pound the tail if I want to. This is my show with John here. This is our show, so
yeah, but
what the heck?
He has this thing he keeps doing this. It drives me nuts.
Anyway, what I was saying is that, you know, there's only so much money that comes into the county. And we can raise or we could lower taxes or we could do whatever we want to do. But what about the spending that we see that's completely wasteful in this county? I mean, literally. I know that's a look of shock on your face, but the look of shock there. But
Can I give you an example?
Sure, sure.
Last winter, our sheriff, undersheriff, and two lead detectives all went to Florida under the disguise of interviewing one person on a 20-year-old missing persons case. Now, supposedly there was a couple here from Salida who were at the same resort they were lounging by the pool at.
The key word there was resort, not Motel 6.
That's right.
Just keep that in mind.
Now, how do you feel about our top four law enforcement officers in this county leaving the county on a trip to Florida in the middle of the worst winter we've had in 30 years at our expense under the disguise of talking to one person when they could have done it over the internet face-to-face or sent one person down? I consider that gross misuse of public funds. I mean, insane. And that's not the only thing that's gone on, but that's the one that comes to mind right now.
Well, most certainly I'd have to maybe in jest say they weren't too dumb. I'd like to went to Florida for a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
this winter,
paid vacation.
But, you know, here's the thing, and let's get back to...
But we paid for it.
What Frank talked about is having good people and doing that and having some oversight in what they're doing and why they're doing it. And most certainly as superintendent of schools, I got those kinds of things. Is why did we send teachers and they went and stayed at the Broadmoor? you know, well, that's where the convention was, you know, and so those are the type of things. And I can't really comment on that issue because you're well informed about that. But I think the bigger issue is accountability of money spent and where it's spent. And I think that that's what Frank and I were talking about is getting back to the basics, deciding on some priorities. And what I found is, and what I know Frank did in his budgets, because they weren't, even though his was $22 million and mine was only $8 million, but yet he had $22 million worth of needs and I had $8 million worth of needs. You have to prioritize. And you have to say, these are our basic services and this is where we're going to spend money and you've got X number of dollars and when it's done, it's done. I think that that is one of the things all taxpayers want out of county officials or out of their elected officials is accountability. Accountability.
Absolutely.
Accountability of what goes on in the county government, because most certainly when it isn't there, we're going to hear about it. And I've been in that arena for a long, long time. As a school superintendent, that was a constant type of thing, because whether it was school buses going someplace or a school car in the wrong place or this or that, that's the kind of thing that we need to be very well of, and accountability. Money is going to get a little tighter. And
I think money's going to get a lot tighter.
Yeah.
And
we have to be there. And I've been there. Anybody that knows anything about the school districts that they knew in way back when is in the early 90s, the Buena Vista School District was all but broke. I mean, closed the doors, broke.
Yeah, I've read that in the paper.
But we worked at it, and we had great people, and we got back, and we went from borrowing money to pay bills to having a $3.2 million excess in money. We talked about somewhere, about in the last 5 minutes, about salaries. And we talked about county employees, and I think that's very important. And then what Frank talked about is empowering them. And I found that to be true is that if you work with people and say, you know, I can't pay you as much as you would make someplace else, but I appreciate what you do. We're going to pay you as much as we can pay you, and we're going to let you do your job. And I think people want to do that. And I found in my position in a leadership type of thing is that once you get people enthused and passionate about what they do, and people are. I mean, there's people that are passionate about working in an office and working in the building department, working for the county clerk or whomever, the sheriff's department. If you appreciate what they do and show them that you appreciate it, pay them as much as you can possibly pay and still keep the budget balanced, I think that you can go a long way. And just going around. I mean, one of the things I did is once a month, I went around and handed everybody their paycheck. Some people had deposits, you know, but I would hand them their thing that their money had been deposited.
Okay.
And I knew for at least 15 seconds, everybody in the district liked me. But I had a chance to visit with everybody, and they had a chance to visit with me.
No, that's actually, very few people in power do that. That's really a good idea.
So,
I mean, you make... probably can't do it with all the county employees, but you certainly can rotate them.
Well, I think what's important here is that someone asked us way back is are you going to keep regular office hours? Well, I'm going to tell you something about office hours. Nothing good comes through the day. Nothing comes good through the door. As a principal, as a superintendent, athletic director, nothing positive comes through the door. You know, if you want to find something positive, you got to go outside that door. And you'll find, and I believe Frank, and he'll talk about that, I'm sure, is that as county commissioners, we need to be in our office, and we need to take care of business, but we also need to be out there with our county employees and the public. You know,
I
wasn't afraid to talk about the school district, and I'm not afraid to talk about the county, whether I'm at the post office, grocery store, or in my office, because that's when people are going to talk to you about.
Right. Well, to be successful at this job, both of you, as does the third commissioner, which is Tim, for the next 2 years, you need to be out there. You need to be at the post office. You need to be at the gas station, because most people aren't going to walk into your office. I mean, they're not, unless they're really mad at you.
I think that's what he just said.
Yeah,
that.
No, I know, and I just clarified it. Yeah, unless they're mad at you, you know, or they've got an issue, for you to really be effective, like I said before, this is going to be a full-time job.
It will, and I practiced management by walking around, and I I'd go to my equipment repair shop and just visit and see what was going on and see what they needed. And I worked on, I'd take a couple days a year and go work with the crews, just go get dirty. And I wasn't supposed to do that.
Okay.
But it kept me kind of in the loop and let them know that I cared. And I believe that the most important thing we can do, and I was fortunate enough to have bosses through my career who let me know that what I was doing was important, and for whatever reason, I was always proud of my job. And I think we need to instill that and find a way for our county folks, our government folks, to find that in their job and in themselves. And it's not always easy. Government is employees are looked down on by many in the public sector and, or the private sector, and that's usually not fair. But I think we can work on that. And I don't care if you're the head of the building department or a janitor or whatever you are, your job is just as important as a county commissioner.
Well, without the people under you, we wouldn't be able to live here.
Absolutely not. And I think as a leader, and I've said this before, if there was a toilet to be cleaned when I was superintendent, I took my turn.
Well, that's leadership and, by example.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
That's the kind of leadership we need here.
And I think that the office in this case is anywhere you can be reached. It's not necessarily behind a door there at the courthouse. You probably produce a lot more when you're out and about. And quite frankly, I think generally when government meets, you have trouble anyway. So the more you're out taking care of business and meeting with people, the better off you are.
Yeah, I don't particularly care how a lot of our governments run. I mean, 8 years of George Bush and all of this stuff, and we're the biggest mess we've ever been in. And we can't do anything about the national problems.
And it's not just George Bush, it's Washington,
period.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
But we can change what we have wrong here.
We can work on that.
Now, personally, I think to really understand everything, because the commissioners, you should spend time with our fire department and talk to these guys on one-to-one.
We already have.
Have you?
Yes, we have. We've had our eyes open.
we spend some time with, they have a group, an organization, I don't know if organization is a good word, but they call it the Chiefs Meeting, and it is all of the major officers in Chaffee County, in Chaffee County, and that is our fire departments, sheriff's department, the police departments, the fire department out of Salida. I mean, every major parks department, everybody is involved in that.
Game and fish.
Yeah, and we've met with those people, and again, it's just what you talked about, is these people are dedicated to what they do. Obviously, our sheriff's department and fire department here in Salida and police departments in Buena Vista and Salida are paid positions, but we have a large group of dedicated people who are the EMTs are paid, a large group of people who dedicate time to be on the fire. You know, they could be at home watching television when that buzzer goes off, but yet they drive, get in their vehicles, drive to the fire station, and put their lives at risk standing out there up on Trout Creek Pass in the middle of the winter when somebody's gone off the side and done that. And we have a great, dedicated group of people, and we need to recognize that, get them the best equipment, and make sure that they understand we appreciate it, and not only just the county commissioners, but the entire county. You know, one of the things that... I wish this campaign was another 6 weeks, because, man, I could get smart about some stuff. You know, but it's going to end in about three.
I know.
But when you get to really looking at things and just say, what do people really want? When you get down to the basics, we talked about land and they want all those, but the thing that they really want is to make sure if they call 911 that somebody's going to respond and do it immediately, and they're going to be taken care of.
Yep, and they can find them.
And they can find them.
Yeah.
First of all, they can find them.
Now, we talked a little bit about that before we went on the air, Dennis.
Yeah.
About how our road system is kind of a little discombobulated. You want to give us your views on that and what you think we can do to change that?
Because I think we need one of the things that we feel, Frank, and I don't want to talk for Frank, but I know he feels the same way because we spent so much time together, people think we're brothers, and we could be twins.
You look so much alike. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. But anyway, one of the things we believe that we need to really look at, and it goes back to basics, is hiring a full-time emergency manager that can coordinate, which we have great groups. They really work well together, our police departments with our sheriff department, fire departments, and county, Buena Vista, Salida. And, but yet we need a position, full-time position, emergency manager. Because one of these days we're going to have a real disaster, probably fire. We're not, you know, the Arkansas isn't going to flood. It could be toxic, but it won't flood to a point. But we need to make sure that we're right on snuff because we don't want to be behind the ball like they were.
Well, one thing for sure, we're going to have a fire.
Oh, yeah.
In this valley.
Sooner or later.
Oh, absolutely. And there's no question about it. It's just going to depend on how big. And with all these mountains burned black around us, it's going to be a pretty big disaster for this county economically. And, you know, you all have to plan for that.
All of these different departments are on the ball and they know what they're doing, but they need someone to carry their voice to the commissioners and get things like the new digital trunk radio system that's available and has been implemented much of the state, and Chaffee County doesn't have it. And I believe that if we had an emergency manager, that person would have been on top of that. They'd have had probably pushed to have GPS and the ambulances and the fire trucks and all the emergency vehicles. And there's so many things that would have come to the forefront that have just kind of been buried.
Well, isn't that kind of and correct me if I'm wrong, the job of our fire chief and our sheriff and our chiefs of police?
In their own areas. It's not countywide.
Okay.
And that's where most counties have this. And these folks have even, the crew we're talking about, the chiefs is what they're called, have put a job description together and presented it to the commissioners to hopefully get somebody on board to do this. And it hasn't happened yet, and this has gone on for quite a while. We have a part-time emergency management coordinator, but he also manages the Salida Airport, and there's no way he can do justice to both.
No, I wouldn't think so.
So that's one of the first things we're going to take care of, is to make sure that that's handled and then start working on this. We need to work at funding fire stations and ambulance bays and those kinds of things. And those are first and foremost on our list. And we need a long-range plan for our county road system. And while the roads are as good as the folks out there can get them, there's a lot of stuff that I recognize needs to be done. And it's from my career and my background, but there's drainage issues and all kinds of things that impact the road surface that aren't being dealt with. And it's not their fault. They're spread thin. But I learned something in my career in the last probably 20 years I worked. Denver kept taking more and more of our people. We became top-heavy. And you had more managers and less workers. And we had more road.
Okay.
Because we widened roads, we ended up with 3- and 4-lane and those kinds of things with less people to take care of them. And we learned to do that through efficiencies, and mostly efficiencies in equipment. And the county can gain so much by doing some of those things, by adding wings to snowplows, which makes them a third wider, and they can plow a road in a pass up and back rather than making two rounds. And there's a lot of things we can do and that Dennis and I will bring to the table that are going to make them more efficient, make the roads better.
And now, why do you think they haven't figured all this out yet?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Because
maybe that's why there's so much money in the coffers, because nobody's spending it in the right place, maybe. I don't know.
One of the things that Dennis and I won't do, I guess I should speak for myself, but I think Dennis will agree, we're going to probably hire a whole lot less consultants and figure out what needs to be done ourselves.
You know, consultants need to make a living, too.
Yes, they do, but they can do it somewhere else.
Yeah.
exactly.
We're going to spend our money on
our
projects.
I don't know how much money's been spent on consultants, but a lot. And then what do they do with it? What do they do with it, guys?
Well, that's a great question, and you know, instead of, well, we're going to study this, and a great guy, and in the political year, and some of you might be old enough to remember a guy by the name of Ross Perot. Remember him?
I do.
Yeah, I actually was talking about Ross this evening at the Cahen potluck. I voted for it.
Well, you know, the guy had a great saying. He said, either we're going to talk about it or we're going to do something about it. If we're going to talk about it, forget about it. I'm leaving. But if we're going to do something about it, I'm here to help you.
Well, if he hadn't picked the vice president,
You're right.
I think he would have won.
Yeah. But anyway, here's the thing, and I think that you'll find is that Frank and myself are solution finders. We're not going to spend a lot of time. But, you know, and the other thing about consultants is that we have a lot of them right here. We don't need to go far. I mean, we have a lot of them
retire here, don't they?
Yeah, well, not consultants. They've made so much money being consultants. But then that's a great group, and they serve some purposes and don't want to make any of those mad because there might be a couple of them voting for us. But anyway, but the thing about it is that, you know, we've got great people that work for us. They know how to do their job and how to do it. And when Frank talked about that earlier, is we just have to sit down and listen, how can you do your job better? One of the things that when we were looking at cutting some money in the Buena Vista School District, and we as administrators, you know, we're set up here in our ivory towers and eat donuts and drink coffee, and we know a lot of things. But we found that the best people to find advice from was the people that were actually doing it. And I'll give you a great example. Is that we had a custodian maintenance staff, and we needed to make sure that we were getting the most efficiency, and they sat down and they told us how they could do their job better. And they did their job better with less people, less money, and we were able to give them a raise just because of what we did. And so I it's what we talked about before. We have great people. They're dedicated to their jobs, and it doesn't take long to find out who is and who isn't. And they're the people going to tell us how to do their job better. We don't have to hire somebody from Denver to come down here and tell us that.
Go talk to the folks. They'll tell you what they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
All right, let me interrupt you guys because I have certain rules I have to live by, and if I don't do that, I get emails.
As well you should. Somebody's got to hold you accountable, for God's sakes.
Everyone, you're listening to John White of the People's Voice, and this is KHENLP 106.9 in Salida, Colorado. And the views expressed on this program are those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. I'm required to do that. This is community radio. Where were we? Whoops. I just pulled the J to May.
Like I said, I co-host this program. I can handle this table if I want to. And Rush Limbaugh made this sound very famous.
I know. Well, I do that when we read the paper. Quite often, Jay and I will go back and forth. I'll read the paper.
The Mountain Disappointment?
Yeah, and criticize things. Because there's a few things to criticize. But hopefully...
But you know what? The other side of the coin is, too, is there's an awful lot of things that are done well here.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that we talked about was the firemen, the EMS people, the law enforcement people there. I mean, yeah, some of the people at the top we have a problem with, but you know what? Those are the unsung heroes out there that are in the river, that are in the snow, that are crawling under a car, that are doing all of the things that need doing to help protect the people of this county. And they don't give their own safety a thought. They just do what they have to do. They do what they're trained to do. And they do that job not because of how well it pays, but because it's what they do. It's who they are.
It's kind of like ranching.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, that's kind of it, you know. I mean, you're either a rancher or you're not a rancher. You can't just wake up and go, I think I'll be a rancher one day. You know, I mean, it's something that it's part of your DNA. And these guys and gals that are out there risking their lives, I mean,
what, John? Every time you do your fingers across there, Jay, it goes across our earphones and across their airwaves.
Well, you know what?
Like, figure it out.
I'm going to put foam rubber on his hand or something.
Duct tape him to the chair or something.
Hey, I'm Sicilian. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, I know.
If I sit on my hands, I won't be able to talk.
I know.
So anyway, like you said, you know, those are the people who will tell you what they need because they do the job every day. And what's wrong with the program? They'll tell you that.
Well, the way I look at things, if you guys want to know what's going on, go talk to the janitors. Go talk to the mechanics at the bay at the county garage. Go ride along with some of the deputies and talk to them. They'll tell you what's really going on. You know, talking to the bosses, you won't.
You know, in school districts, we always talked about that is that I could go out and speak in front of a group of people about an issue, but they would catch a secretary, a custodian, a maintenance guy down at the post office, and because they felt like they really knew what was going on, and sometimes they really did.
Yeah.
You know, and so and that's what you have to talk about is that you have to understand, and you get with those people and find out what they're doing, and it doesn't mean that the current people up there at the top aren't aware, but sometimes you lose that disconnect between the top and the bottom, and I think that's what Frank talked about here just a few minutes ago, and when he goes out and works with people and whether I was visiting classrooms or whatever. But I think as county commissioners, no matter who or what department it is, whether it's in the treasurer's office, in the county clerk's office, they need to be comfortable with us being right there and visiting with them. And then you have to have that feeling and trust with those other elected officials that we're not in there trying to dig something out behind their back and this and that kind of stuff, because once you get that kind of attitude going on in an organization,
it
is ugly and it doesn't get better. But you just have to do that trust. And one of the things that way back did as county commissioners, and I don't know when that stopped and why it stopped, but it would be something I would like to get started back again is. We used to have a summit or a round table type of thing. You know, there's always a fancy name for a bunch of people getting together and having lunch. But the county commissioners used to sponsor a countywide group, and I was involved with it as superintendent of schools. Jim Wilson was involved with it at Salida, superintendent of schools, the county managers or the city people from Buena Vista, Poncha Springs, and Salida were involved. The Forest Service, the BLM people. I mean, it was just every county government or government was involved in that roundtable type of thing. And we'd have lunch once a month. The county commissioners would talk about a few things. And then we would go around the table and just say basically what we were up to. You know, what the Buena Vista School District was up to, what BLM was up to, what the Forest Service was up to. And you know what? We all kind of learned something from each other, and we kind of found that we had some things that were in common, and some other things is that we found out that, geez, I didn't realize that, and that will affect what I'm doing. I didn't understand that, but, you know, the correctional facility, you were talking about that, you know, lack of staff. We were down some enrollment at Buena Vista School District, and we found out that the correctional facility was something like 38 to 40 people understaffed. And when you kind of figure like 1.2 kids per person, you know, we were down about 45 kids. You know, and so we...
Their understaffing had to do with the fact that you didn't have...
Most when you have to realize how people come to the correctional facility is that they're young families. That's where they get their start. And so when they're down 40 to 45 people, 38 people, whatever it is, and they're a family, and usually young people have at least 1.2. Now, where the 0.2 comes from beats the heck out of me, but that's what they were down. And so we were losing around 38 to 40 kids in enrollment, and that's, you know, you could really pinpoint, here's an organization that was down in employees.
But how can this, and I'm changing the subject, but how can the state get away with that? I mean, I kind of can understand it a little bit more on the county level, but on the state level, to have the biggest liability in the county. I mean, if there was a big breakout at the Buena Vista Correctional Facility and they were all real mad at us, it caused...
That was my second level of concern. Most certainly it was a concern with a lot of people that were in... positions of authority or managers or whatever, because they were having a lot of people work double shifts. and a lot of stuff is going on. And you have to understand when would this happen. This was right after 9/11, when the whole state economy went to heck in a handbasket. And, we could go into that for about a month and a half, and that's another story. But, you know, we were laughing at one point. When I say laughing, the state of Colorado actually was thinking about selling some of their buildings.
Oh, they're not done with that. There's going to be a whole lot more of that if we don't
and so we
pay
were
attention
laughing,
to it.
Yeah, so we were laughing that it would be the state Nissan capital of Colorado or the Invesco Senate building, you know. Yeah. But, I mean, they were and selling them because then they then lease them back because they could get the capital gain out of them.
The same thing can happen to the school systems. The same thing can happen to any of our infrastructure, our public lands, and they're already being looked at. With us being, and there are those that are speaking of us being in the position of being in receivership at this point in time.
It's an interesting situation, and it's going to, the economy and the government and where we're at with bailouts and everything like that, and I didn't see what the stock market did today, but...
I think it was up 400 points.
Yeah, you know, and it's just this wide swing, and it's not for the faint of heart for anyway. But we're going to see some of that. I mean, right away, just here a month ago, the state of Colorado froze all hirings.
Yep.
And all new construction and a preventive type of thing because they didn't want to get too far out there. Most certainly the state of Colorado and the things that they get from federal government. One of the big budget items with the county is our human services, which is funded by federal and state money. We have some great needs there, and the county has to put in some other money there. So that's going to be interesting to see how that all shakes out a little bit. And so it's going to take some good financial planning, some good oversight, and people who are not nervous at the switch and been there and done that before. And have to look some people in the face and say, we did that last year, but we can't do it this year.
And if you're counting on government grants to fund you, you could be in a whole lot of trouble.
I was hoping that people start looking at that, because when you start getting grant money, you're being obligated to something you might not want to be obligated to.
That, and it may not be available.
Well, and that's...
So, you know, there's... a lot of things with grants, and especially government grants, I believe that, I don't know what you get back on your original dollar, but I'll bet it's less than 50% by the time it makes the route through the government and gets back to you with the strings attached. You're really getting hosed. So,
to put it politely.
Corporate grants and GOCO grants, I'm all for them. I think they're great. GOCO is a self-inflicted tax. Do it if you want to. You don't have to. Whereas many of the government grants are where we have to pay into them through our taxes. And I question the value. I'd much rather they left the money here and let us decide how to spend it. But we're not there yet, and we have to live with the system as it is. But I think we need to start making some changes. And who better than us?
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. And what we look at, and that it's always this famous word, is we want to start, well, let's go out and get a grant. And there are grants out there. I won't deny that. There's people that have money, and they have different things and grants. But what we always looked at is that you have to decide for whom and at what value and what does it cost. You know, and that's one of the tests that we... look at, and we looked at, and Frank talked about that a little bit, is what's the value added, and at what cost? And we had a thing that we said when a new program came in that we wanted to know, you know, how it met our goals. And that's when I think the thing the county has to decide what we're talking about is priorities. How will this meet or enhance or make this better? For whom and at what price? And so that's kind of the thing that we look at, is for whom and at what price. And when you say price, it's just not dollars. It, you know, it takes time and staff energy to write and administer grants. And so, you know, and there are some that are just pretty much on the every year thing, the DOLA grant and those types of things that are pretty much the justification kind of grants, which we had before is the federal government and No Child Left Behind grant, which when it originally came out, I thought it was a transportation thing, but I wasn't very sharp and figured out it was actually
sharp as a bowling ball.
Well,
I'll
tell you what, boy. You know, and I joke about that. I knew exactly what it was.
Right, right. I'm kidding.
You know, I thought it was a transportation grant. Well, we can use some of that. But anyway, but you know, you have to look at every one of them. And what we talked about is that, as Frank talked about, is that it. You got to look at every bandwagon that comes by the front door. It doesn't mean you have to jump on it, but you got to look at it. And if it's going to benefit us and fit what we want to do, then let's see if we can't do it. But what you have to really be careful about is, and everybody has to understand this going in, if the county starts a government or a project or a program, excuse me, and it's by grant money, if the grant money isn't there, you're not either.
Well, and I have to, from my research and some things, they'll put out kind of grant money for certain areas, and then they will yank it back and then start creating a situation that you may not want down the road. Say, like, they've been heavy into funding a lot of police things that they may be good for in some respects, but in other respects, they may be creating more of a police state than creating a situation for the safety of the people. And I don't know how to describe it, but I don't understand why we have a SWAT team in Salida when the jail may be undermanned. Or, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but it's just a thought.
Well, being on a SWAT team is fun.
Well, I think that there's where some areas that we can look at and say, okay, I mean, how can we combine resources? There is no sense in duplication of resources.
Right.
And so if the county is spending some money on an area and the Buena Vista Police Department, the Salida Police Department are spending, how can we do that? You know, and we have a great resource, and most certainly some of the best trained people. We have our own in the Sheriff's Department and some of those kinds of things, and keeping people here. You know, you don't hate to train them and then send them off to some other greater and bigger job. We'd like to keep them here.
And that's what I've seen happen.
Oh, yeah. And we have that in every department. It's what we faced in school systems. But we also have another great group is the correctional facility that has a great training program. Well, how can we combine resources, work with resources, and say, okay, why do we need to have duplicate resources?
I guess I didn't explain myself very well when I was stating that. Okay, if they present money, grants, to increase your police force, mm-hmm. but then they pull the money back, then you got to start looking for revenue to support that police force. But where is the first place they're going to go? It starts being fines.
Yeah.
And does that fine serve the public, or who does it serve?
So, are you
talking about the speed tax?
You know, Frank.
Well, that's one of them.
I went up to the ranch the other day. There were two troopers. They had cars pulled over within 100 yards of each other. When I left the ranch, they were in the same spot. Two more cars pulled over.
On the other side of the road.
Yeah. I mean, my God. It is a speed tax.
Do you think they call that road Revenue Road for no good reason?
I know.
This highway has as many patrolmen as anywhere I've ever been in this country.
You can go like a bat out of you know where on almost any other road in this county except for that one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, as long as you don't go on that road, you're safe. I mean, seriously. I mean, I hardly ever see... Well, it's the truth. Enforcement on a lot of the county roads.
I have to go home that way.
Well, you're in big trouble now. And
you'd be surprised who listens to me, Frank.
Oh.
When I stir things up, my phone rings all day on Friday. It really does. So people are listening.
Well,
I know
you can drive. You can drive 291. I mean, I get passed on 291 like choo choo choo. There's not a cop in sight. You get on 285, everybody's like, just humming along.
Everybody who's got half a brain is driving the speed limit.
Or if they're not from this county, it's like you're going to see them pulled over in a couple of minutes if they pass you. Guarantee it.
If you go on the internet, it's notorious stretch of highway in the country.
Wow. Well, regarding your funding through grants and those kinds of things, you need to be very careful that you don't use them for a program where you're going to be dependent on them. You know, if it's a one-time thing for a purchase of something or those mm-hmm. kinds of things, then that's certainly worth looking at. If it's a program that you're going to need to constant funding year to year, you really, really better pay attention to what you're getting yourself into. So I agree. I think you need to be careful, and Dennis is right. We do need to look at all of them individually, and some of them are so difficult to administer. You don't even want them a second
time. So many stipulations on the grant money, how it can be spent.
I mean, do you guys have experience in getting grants?
That's a great question.
And I'm hoping I know the answer.
Well, I tell you this.
Because it the is position a big, big of county part of our funding.
Let me be as polite as I can be about this. The position of county commissioner is not to be a grant writer. You can hire grant writers.
Right, and I expect that.
Yeah. But if you want leadership, and if there's grants out there, it's not the job of the county commissioner. It wasn't my job as a superintendent to appoint to be that. You have good people underneath you and say, okay, what do we need to do? You facilitate those kinds of things. And I think that that's where we have some things going on. It talks about micromanaging and whatever is that the county commissioners need to be in charge, but they don't need to be doing what they've been doing. And it's kind of like a big change of philosophy that we worked on, and I keep going back to the Board of Education, and but there is some similarities to that. And we changed to a style of government called policy governance. And basically is that we gave responsibilities, the board gave responsibilities to the superintendent of schools. And it's the same thing as the county commissioners. You give responsibilities to your road and bridge guy, your head of finance, your head of personnel, you have all of these other departments. And all you ask for is accountability and show us that you're doing what you need to be doing. I was evaluated every month. So when my contract came up, there was no surprises. But that's what you have to do. And so if you want to facilitate grant writing and doing those kinds of things, not that we want to add county positions, but there are good people that you can go out there and do that. That's not the position of the county commissioner. The county commissioner needs to understand three basic philosophies about leadership. One to lead, one not to lead, and one to stay the heck out of the way. And so sometimes you have to take some leadership roles. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to just kind of stay out of the way and follow the good people. And then there's sometimes you got to be smart enough just to stay the heck out of the way and stay out of that. And so when you get good people, those are real simple things to do. And so grant writing and getting grants and I can get this grant or that or whatever is that lead that up to the experts. As county commissioners, we need to be the leaders in facilitating those types of things. And if there's a good one there and you have people there where we can go out and get it, and most certainly as a superintendent of schools, that came across my desk as much as junk mail.
There's one thing that I've brought up at another meeting or two, and it is being aware of what's going on the world as a whole, because they're focusing in on county levels, local levels, but doing it in a way that maybe we may not be recognizing it up front. You have, just recently, within the last year, we had three counties become heritage areas. Well, they didn't really have to ask the county for the people for that designation. That affects those counties, and it can affect their property values. But what you see in the press is that it's a wonderful thing. Well, maybe for some people, but not for everybody. And if we're not keeping aware of what's going on a national and international level, that is being focused on a local level, we may be missing out on some really important issues. And it's going on around us all the time. And the only reason why I'm bringing this up is because I have been focused on this sort of thing. And water is going to be the hugest, and it's being focused on an international level. And it may be, if we're not on top of that international issue, we may lose out on the local level. Does that make sense?
Yes, regarding water, we're lucky to be at the top of the food chain here. So we get it first, and all we've got to do is figure out a way to hang on to it. If you're downriver, it gets a little tougher.
Yeah, well, I'm on the Bowen Ditch, and Pueblo's been trying to buy that water. And I thought they were going to do it. I thought they had a deal to sell all the water out of the Bowen Ditch, and fortunately it fell through. And I really don't have anything to say about the decision. But my philosophy is, guys, do whatever you can to keep the water in this valley. I mean, it's a high desert. And all the homes that are coming in here that are drilling wells, what they've done up on Gary Hill's place, I mean, all those beautiful green meadows, they're not going to be beautiful green meadows much longer. And that's a big draw for this county. And if our leaders let the water go out, I think we're looking at disaster. When things dry up and forests start burning and they've sold most of the water out of the valley,
it'll look like it did 200 years ago.
We're getting a lot of the public-private partnerships being, really pushed heavily. And they make that sound like such an efficient manner of using certain things like your commons, but they're also going to be getting heavily into the resource area. And if we're not, we may not want to be jumping on the bandwagon for that. And I'm not so sure that the county commissioners really come into the water factor. I think that's more of a state issue.
Well, it is and it isn't, most certainly. The county commissioners are on the bench. They might not be on the first team, but they're on the bench of that whole thing. Let me go back to something you talked about earlier with the Heritage. And I think it's a looped road. It's 291, comes down into Slide. And
now that's a scenic byway. That's scenic called byway. A Heritage area.
Right.
But you have to kind of pay attention to that term, Heritage.
Right. And most certainly we attended a presentation by Garna and the Heritage Group here a couple of months ago, that they were starting to roll out their Heritage thing, and that was a part of it, and what it can and can't do, and where you're at. And there's a lot of, I'd say, misinformation, is apprehension by landowners, especially along those areas of the big ranch owners and stuff like that, and some of them feel like it's another attack on their property and what they can and can't do. And
I don't think that's totally unwarranted, though.
Well, it's just getting the right information out. I'm not saying it's right or wrong.
Right, okay,
I'm just saying
right.
That there is some feelings there because it's mm-hmm. another group. But water, you know, it doesn't take very much of a genius to get up on something high in Chaffee County and see what's green and what's not. Even in a wet year, the real green mm-hmm. stuff is being watered, and the real lighter green is not watered. And we were talking about that years just here a couple of weeks ago, and that a lot of newcomers didn't know that Chaffee County was the lettuce capital for a long time, and that a lot of irrigation was going on and that type of thing. And of course, refrigerated cars and everything like that. But water is tremendously important. You were talking about the Bowen Ditch. I can tell you about another individual that owns a small water thing up north of Buena Vista. He's been approached by the city of Aurora. They don't want it. I think the deal is, someone told me that Aurora can't take any more water out of Chaffee County for 40 years, so it's like 38 years. And that's what they told the guy. He says, we'll give it to you. We'll pay you now, but we're not going to get it for 38 years. You have to understand my philosophy or upbringing about water. Frank has heard this so many times, he can repeat it. But I grew up in southeastern Colorado in a little community and called Sugar City, Ordway, Crowley County area down in there.
Okay, I've been all through there. I went to the police academy in Lahana.
Oh, okay. Now, I grew up north of there, and probably one of the biggest or first major water purchases in the state of Colorado by Aurora, Pueblo, and Colorado Springs came from that farming community down there. It was the whole Twin Lakes system. The farmers actually own the tunnels that go through Independence Pass and bring water out on the other side. They owned all of that. And the storage rights in Twin Lakes, they have, they had the ability to bring it down. That was before Pueblo Dam. There's a diversion point down below Boone, Colorado, that puts in that water. They sold all that water. And so anyway, and now, you know, a lot of people like Frank talked about is they made great money way back in the 60s. Some of them were a little bit smarter than others, and they're living off that money. But Colorado Springs and Aurora and all those didn't take delivery on that water until the late 80s. That was about 71. And when it started drying up that country down there, I mean, great farmland. I was just down there today. My mom still lives down there. And if you remember last, April, they had that big fire down there. There's two firemen got killed. I've crossed that bridge 100 times, never gave it a thought. And that bridge burnt, and it burned up that county, and they're lucky it didn't burn up more. But it's because there's no economy down there. It's, I mean, there's no farming goes on. There's just great fields that I remember as a kid that were great hay fields and corn fields, and there was a few watermelon patches, too. And those were great fun this time of year. But that's a dried up country. And we'll see the same thing here. I mean, the Front Range and their thirst for water can dry us up. And a lot of the water that we see go down the river isn't, it is their water. And they either pump it out at Otero, they take it out, they move it into 11 Mile or whatever they do there. They're going to be, it's just like car payments, it's going to be relentless.
Well, one of the reasons why I bring this up is what's taking place, not just here, but this is taking a place all across the country and internationally, is that there's plans to change the governments in of certain respects. But when it comes down, if you want to get rid of a farmer or whatever, what is the first thing you go after? You go after the water. If you want to take over a large swath of land, you know, the military, what does the military want with that much more area when the federal government owns so much land in this country in the first place? When you start finding out that the people are being encroached upon, these guys don't necessarily just come up with this idea one day. They plan years in advance. And when you start looking into it and studying it, you will find out they don't have a problem hiding it either. It's just when you confront them and back them into a corner, they'll start denying it.
Well, I think one of the things that the question is, and we had that question about, is how we feel about eminent domain. And it would have to be the last resort. And it would have to be definitely something about health, safety, and welfare before I would, as a county official, even come.
It's all over Southeast Colorado. Oh, there's those trucks, that semi-trucks, saying they don't want to give their land away.
You know, I know some people who live down there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and the problem is that I think the federal government and the Army has kind of backed off a little bit, but there's still a lot of apprehension. And my ex-brother-in-law has a sign out in his yard that says, "Over my dead body." And I pretty much believe him. It will be that, but you know, we can only deal with what we can here in Chaffee County. We have to worry about the rest of it because it affects us personally and also affects Chaffee County.
Yeah, Southeast Colorado dries up.
What is the difference between the military wanting land and that we willingly give up so much of our lands to wilderness, that you've got places now like around Crestone where they're wanting to even close off walking trails and the ability to get to the land. So what is, you know, there's some things there. If we're not paying attention and staying on top of it, there may be some other plans in the works going on that we may be sold to us as this wonderful thing to preserve in the environment, and it may be more about getting a hold of resources and land in a way that we will give it to them instead of having eminent domain mentioned.
And that brings us to the Browns Canyon Wilderness Area.
Yeah, I was going to just ask you about that. I know it's been all in the newspaper about your views on it. But
as you know, I'm adamantly opposed.
As am I.
I believe that we have lots of public land.
Aren't we like
85%? I don't think that counts the highway right-of-ways and all those things.
Right, but that's one of the reasons I moved here.
Yeah, and giving up Browns Canyon is for the use of a very few at the expense of everyone.
That's true.
And because of that, I cannot go along with it. I don't agree with it. I think it's wrong. There's a lot of people that won't be able to use it anymore because they're not able to get out there and walk. And who knows where it goes. And I think it's, you know, it doesn't amount to much in the big scheme of things, but it's another piece. And we cannot afford to let it go on.
It's called boiling the frog, and that's what's kind of happening. I did not realize, you know, I hadn't looked at a map in years because I wasn't a big hiker for most of my life. And then when I started looking at the map that used to be U.S. Forest Service land, was all of a sudden wilderness areas. We got a lot of wilderness area. And again, I'm not against environment or wilderness, but when you start watching this incremental movement to move people out, and then you see these companies coming in and drilling on wildland or wildlife refuge, there's some mixed message going on there.
Well, you know, you need to be a little bit more passionate about it.
That's part of the reason I asked her to be here. Yeah.
And that's great. You know, it's always great to have somebody passionate about something. And I say this in all sincerity is that that's what's great, to work with people who have a passion for it. We might not agree for it.
She's unbelievably intelligent.
You know, let's go back to Browns Canyon. And my issue with Browns Canyon is that let's go the opposite way. Let's talk about a piece of ground that has never had a road on it, and it's been an area that people, the only way they could access it is walk. Okay? You can't ride a bicycle in there. You can ride in there on horseback. Now we've decided that we're going to go in there and just bulldoze in a bunch of roads so everybody can enjoy it. I would be against that, too. Because I think it's taken away the rights of some things. And I think that's my basic issue with Browns Canyon. I'm not going to argue whether it's the most pristine area or it's this or it's that or whatever, but it has been forever a traditional, quote-unquote, mixed-use area. Now we have a group of people, well-meaning and very passionate about their thing.
They are, and I don't doubt it.
I don't have a problem with it, but they want to take the rights away from somebody else. And I just really struggle with that. And that's my issue about the Browns Canyon is that it's going to take away the rights of a group of people who have had traditional use to some areas.
Now, hasn't Mr. Mallett pushed to bring it to a wilderness area?
I believe so.
He's been a part of that, and I'll just say this real quickly is that when the original county commissioners group, which Jerry wasn't a part of, it was commissioners before, approved that, it was about one-third the size of it is now. Mm-hmm. They've increased the acreage on that thing about twice to three times bigger than what they originally approved as a wilderness area, and that was probably an area that goes along the river and was accessed, but the only way they could get in there was by helicopter, you know, or horseback or up the railroad or by raft.
I've been into some of our wilderness areas, and I go there because there aren't many people there. Because not many people can get into a wilderness area. They can't hike that far. They can't ride a horse that far. They don't have access to it. And as you guys know, as we all know, this county survives largely on tourism.
Well, you know, that's the thing. If there's a road there now, then let's make use of the road. Here's the thing. If I have a public building, public business, I have to conform to the Americans with Disabilities Act. I have to put in ramps. I have to be wheelchair accessible and so on and so forth. Well, that's public property. It's a public place where people can go, right?
Yes.
Okay. Isn't that public land? So what you're saying is if you make this a wilderness area, if you can't ride a horse and you can't walk, you can't go there. Sorry. I mean, think about it.
Oh, I know.
I mean, you know what I'm saying?
No, I agree with
how many people come here from so many other states to hunt, to fish, to hike, to camp, to backpack, to whatever, and if they can't get access, they're not going to come here, I would think. I mean, there's areas in California that we've been going, my dad's been going there in Jeeps since the 40s, and then all of a sudden they closed whole massive tracts of land to any vehicular access at all, and it just absolutely killed tourism completely.
There was a situation that I was reading where the Park Service wanted to shut down the mid-range parks shutting down the mid-range parks because they didn't bring in as much money, they didn't have as many people. Well, what happens? They were the overflow for those big parks instead, because a lot of people also don't want to go to one place where it, I mean, you have to book years in advance to even camp. And we have, we're starting to see that in this state.
One of the arguments for Browns Canyon was that the areas that do allow four-wheelers and Jeeps and those kinds of things are overrun, and we need an area that's not that. And I think the opposite is true. We need to keep them spread out as much as we can because they're going to come anyway. So why restrict that? And I just keep going back to it. It's there for everybody, has been, always has been. It's just not right to take it away.
But there are millions of acres of public land around this area that you can't get to by anything other than foot or horseback.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Absolutely.
Millions of acres. So why do we need to take this piece and do the same thing when the roads are already there, everything's already there, it's already being used, and it's being used responsibly. Nobody's tearing it up.
Well, you know, and it's just like anything is that those advocates for their side talk about, you know, those few people who do abuse the types of things. And when you visit with the avid ATVers and their four-wheelers and the responsible ones, they hate those people as worse as anybody because they ruin their style of recreation.
They make it bad for everybody.
Exactly. And you know, you talk about tourism. The local ATV club just sponsors their annual color run that they had, and there was over 200 people. And that was reserved. I mean, you have to put in. They only accept X number of people. You know, they could have another 200 if they want, but they want to be responsible, and so they hold that number down. And they're filled up by mid-September. Or, I mean, mid-August or there. I mean, they have to start turning people down. So, you know, they're trying to police their own type of things, and it is what you talked about, is, John, is just great tourism. I mean, we have to have a diverse tourism. You know,
that's how we survive.
Yeah, you know, what would be the deal is if we took a part of the Arkansas River and said we can't float down it in boats anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can get in there is by walking or swim.
Or walk on water.
A walk on water, and there's only, well, we won't go into that.
No, I know, yeah.
I mean there's only been one documented case of that.
Yeah. And look what we did to him.
Exactly right.
Now you'll get some emails.
Let that be a lesson to you. Yeah.
Now, what do you guys see for our future? Because as times get hard in our economy, people are going to travel less. And we do survive largely on tourists, the fishermen and the rafters and the skiers and the hunters. What if things get tight enough so that they slow down and the money starts shrinking? What are your ideas to keep our tourism economy viable?
I think that one of the things we do is make people welcome, and that goes clear back to industry and welcoming tourism, industry, small business, whatever, welcoming them into the county and helping them get what they need to survive here. If the economy goes all to pot, I think tourism is probably going to be the least of our worries. We're just going to be a matter of getting from day to day, and I hope we don't go there. I have to trust that we won't, but I don't trust our folks in Washington very far.
Well, it's kind of a fine balance because you guys are trying to bring growth in the area.
Yes.
But at the same time, you got to help the people that are here sustain themselves, too.
Absolutely. And you know, you look at them first and make sure that they're taken care of and just get out of the way. And I, you know, here's an example. We're currently buying gravel, the county is, from Fremont County and trucking it clear to Buena Vista.
Why?
Well, I'm not sure.
We have gravel pits here, don't we?
Yes, we do. And that's something that we're looking into, and it makes very little sense. It's expensive, and we're not supporting local business. And that's a problem.
I mean, it's a little like buying oil from other countries, I think.
The gravel trucks running up and down the canyon.
I mean,
I wasn't aware of this one.
Oh, now you are.
That's something that just doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
You know, we were talking about economy, and most certainly this last summer was a good test of that with gas and stuff like that. Visited with some good friends of mine that run a rafting company, and so we were talking about that. And they said they had a really slow start. But he said what they found is that, for the most part, people had already planned a vacation. And so they came. They might not have spent as much money as we'd have liked to see them spend. They were a lot more economical about it. And what he was talking about is that they still came to raft and did that, but they didn't buy as many T-shirts, and they didn't buy as many of this or the pictures or whatever. And they might have been a little bit more frugal about where they ate and how they ate, you know. And there were some numbers that were put together here just recently that Frank and I looked at, and the ranching and tourist business and how much money comes in from that. I think where we're going to really see it is this next summer, because people had already planned that vacation, and so maybe this next summer is you know, they didn't make the reservations, or they're going to be a little bit tighter wallet with that thing. And so that's why we need a more diverse economy. Most certainly tourism is a big one, and it is our calling card. And we have a great bunch of people who dedicate themselves to the tourist board. And, you know, that's what goes out and advertises Chaffee County. We need to support that, make sure that we got some good people involved in that, and that have been, and that they are supporting everything that we can.
I have a question, and I don't know the answer.
So that's what we do.
I know. I'm hoping you guys do. The lady from the Chamber of Commerce, why has she resigned? Do you know? It was just in the paper that they submitted her resignation.
In the paper, she said that it had something to do with the political swing
of
the
tourism board. And do you know really what's behind that? Because I don't.
Not completely, no.
So. Dennis, you got any ideas?
Well, I think I know who we're talking about there, and I didn't read everything about it, and I have visited with her about that. And I think it's just kind of some internal type of things that are going on, and some different philosophies, who's right and who's wrong, is that those are the types of things as county commissioners we need to get the resolve to it and get to the bottom of it, find out. No, we don't need to be meddling in the tourist board, but when we have internal types of problems, they cause external issues. And so if we don't have a group of people working well together that is a vital part of Chaffee County, which we just talked about as tourism, we need to make sure that we don't need to muddle into their problems, but we need to make sure that we find out what's going on and get it resolved, and we get to move forward, because it is vital. That is a key thing for a lot of people. I can't tell you, and you talked about being in the building business, how many people have you ever visited with that you built homes for that either vacationed here or they grew up here years ago and moved back? And tourism is a key issue. We need to make sure that is our calling card to Chaffee County.
Oh, we're known internationally.
Yes. We've had some great, I mean, as noted in the article, they've gotten some great recognition, and Salida has, Buena Vista has, Poncha Springs. And, you know, that was kind of the problem with Chaffee County in my years of experience in the late 80s. It was kind of the donut hole of Colorado. You know, everything was growing around it, but except for Chaffee County. I mean, the Front Range was going nuts, and the I-70 corridor was going nuts. California started on fire. They all moved to Durango. Pagosa Springs, they just crossed the border and said, this is Colorado, and we're moving here. And you know, the Chaffee County did not grow very much.
Well, I think the leaders back then didn't want it to grow. They wanted it to stay the way it always had been.
Well, you know, in my experience, and it comes from back to school districts, is when you have areas that grow, there's the certain struggle that you have between the old timers and the new timers. And
it's like worship in church. You have the old timers who want the old hymns, and you have the younger people that want the new contemporary music, and it's like,
well, you know, and that's the issues that you have to deal with and understand them. And I think that's why we have an issue about land use. We have a lot of people exactly who don't want to see developments everywhere, and we have a large group of people that understand we have growth, but it needs to be managed growth. We need some intelligent decisions to do that. And I think what Frank talked about is the roundtable group, which has been citizens that spent 2.5 years of their life in meetings, and some of them have not been fun. And there have been some that have been very tense, and I've just been to about two or three of them, and I've said, boy, this is more fun than, you know, shoveling ping pong balls with a pitchfork. You know, gosh, oh, Friday. But the group of people are starting to understand that everybody has some passion for what they want, and yet they have to understand they have to give up some of those types of things. And we're going to have a thing when it's all said and done, and hopefully we can do that. But that's going to be the major decision that the county commissioners are going to make in this next group of county commissioners. And we need to take that recommendation as county commissioners and implement it and make sure that it's usable. We get back to tourism and we talk about those kinds of things. We can, in 1978, the rafting industry was a joke. Everybody joked about it.
There wasn't much rafting industry here at the time. No, now it's one of our biggest economies in the
it,
valley.
It has been, and I'm going to tell you, for the Buena Vista School District, it was one of our best recruiting tools for staff. Because we had kids that came here in the summer that rafted, liked the lifestyle, and either got an education degree or their spouse did, or girlfriend, boyfriend, or whatever, and they moved back and wanted to be teachers because what a great combination. They could teach all winter, raft all summer. And we still have, and I'm sure Salida has the same thing, but I'm more familiar with the Buena Vista School District, a half a dozen to a dozen teachers that their spouses or themselves are involved in the rafting industry in the summertime. And it's a great way for the younger people to do that. Salida is huge.
I wanted to bring up something else that's just struck me is when I drive around town here, I see a lot of people with the political signs in their yard. And, they seem to be straight ticket. And I just find that really interesting because there actually are a fair amount of us that kind of like to be independent in our vote and actually go after the person and not necessarily the party. And yet I have had it mentioned to me before, and they're saying, well, you have to go party. That's how the game is played. But in all reality, it's the parties that have squeezed out a lot of good politicians that had some differing ideas.
On the national level, I think that you're forced to choose parties. At the local level, as county commissioners or city councilmen, which aren't political positions, any of these, I don't think should be tied to a party. I really don't. It doesn't make a difference. You should look at our qualifications, which have been pretty well presented in the paper and so on, and make your choice based on that, not on a party. If I had a choice, I would probably be an independent, but I don't. If you're going to run for public office, you'd better pick one or the other.
And that's
without that, you don't have the support you need to get there. So because of that, I'm where I'm at, and the Republican is definitely, the thinking is a lot more along my lines. But my dad was a Democrat. My family were Democrats. The Democratic Party's changed some, and I switched parties. But it has nothing to do with how I will be or what I will do as a county commissioner.
And that's how I choose to vote, is to vote for the person and what I feel like they're going to do. But I've had some absurd statements made to me on why people vote for somebody instead of really looking at the person, looking at their record. There's a big drama right now going on about birth certificates about one of the candidates. Well, if it's one of the criteria, then, you don't get a passport without a birth certificate. Or if you have a situation about somebody being able to dress a moose, that's why you're going to vote for them? Now, I've heard some really crazy comments.
I don't know if I'd vote for her because of that, but I sure as heck marry her.
Well, or to vote against her.
It's kind of like the old thing is looking for a wife, send a picture of the boat.
Yeah. Yeah, but, what kind of gun did she shoot?
Yeah, if those that are listening still have a Mountain Mail today, there's a great letter to the editor written by a person very close to Frank about that. Today, Sherry wrote one, and it's in the Mountain Mail about picking candidates for the people they are. And I agree with that 100%. One thing that's been kind of interesting, probably more so than any commissioner race before us, is that the people want to find out about the candidates. If they want to find out about Frank or want to find out about me or find out about our opponents. They've had several opportunities to do that in forums. I think we've been in five of them, five or six. We've been on.
Oh yeah, no, I was kind of hesitant.
Yeah.
To ask you guys on here because you've done so much already.
Well, we've been at least at KHN. This is my third time here. You know, and they're starting to think I volunteer here or whatever. But anyway, you know, and the radio stations, the newspapers, the Mountain Mail, the Chaffee County Times have done excellent jobs on, and so. You know, there's a chance for the people to look at the candidates, and I would hope that they would do that and make that
websites.
Choice.
Websites, mention websites.
Oh, yeah, websites, and you know, everybody has them. That's the new thing, you know, www.frankholman.com and DennisGeese.com, and we won't talk about the other two websites. But anyway, but
I saw an ad in the paper. I haven't pulled it up, but for Chaffee Watch, am I correct?
Yes.
ChaffeeWatch.com. What's that?
Don't know. You need to pull it up.
Yeah, because I saw the advertisement and then meant to pull it up. Because there's other websites too. Salida Citizen.
Yes.
And the Voice of ChaffeeCounty.com.
Thank you for mentioning that.
And there's
one BV too.
And it's just to change the demographics of the people. You know, because a lot of people search the web and they're willing to do that. It's easy for us as candidates to put our platforms out there real easy and simple and to do that. But, you know, getting back to choosing candidates, and I would hope that their contrast between all the candidates has been pretty apparent. And to say one party is better than the other or that or that, and there's people that are going, I mean, they're going to be dedicated to that. Mm-hmm. They're passionate about
right,
that.
But in this case, yeah. You've got to vote for the person.
I agree with that.
You really do. Yeah. I mean, I've been an independent ever since I was 18 years old and I registered to vote.
Yeah. Well, we're sorry.
But, yeah. But you know, that's the way I think.
Yeah. And
yes,
and,
you do.
And sometimes you have to register. I mean, in some previous races, the county commissioner's race was won or lost in the primary because of two candidates, either Democratic or Republican, were facing off each other in the primary. And so you had to, if you wanted to make that decision, you had to register as one of those to vote in that, because once whoever won that race was, there wasn't any opponent in the opposite party. So you have to be very aware of that. And I would hope that in people choosing myself as a candidate, and I think, and I know Frank feels the same way, I would hope that they would choose us because they think we're going to be the best leaders, not that we're Republican, Democrats, or green, white, purple, or red.
That's the way I've always thought.
One other major thing that I've been trying to bring up is trying to have some exit polling, just to kind of demonstrate to people that we need to be on top of the voting process. And There's always these factors going on that we may not think that they're that important, but they really do make an effect on how our elections come out. And I've been trying to set up exit polls and getting some volunteers, if anybody wants to volunteer, to help a few of us out so that we can just kind of make sure that the election comes out as it should.
And you know, the reality of it is, if you don't do exit polls, how do you know?
Right, because I mean, we don't with it when you're using computerized software.
Things happen. And we call this faith-based voting, because you have to have faith in the people and faith in the equipment to know that your vote is being counted. And if you look at what's going on nationally right now with voter fraud, and this Acorn thing is just a piece of it, it's not the whole picture. There are so many stories of voter fraud in counties across America everywhere that have nothing to do with Acorn. It's just part of this debacle we're in with these voting machines. It is a mess. It really is, truly is a mess. So at least with exit polling, we get an idea of what's going on, and it helps eliminate the perception of impropriety.
There was, in the last major election in Ohio, the person that I believe was the CEO of Diebold that literally said he was going to bring the election in for the Republican Party at that point, which would have been Bush. But and I'm not trying to say one way or the other. I'm just saying that process didn't start with him or whatever. It's just that it has been refined with the computerized equipment. And when we we actually have an opportunity with having fewer polling places to even follow it with an exit polling process. If we can get some volunteers, we could actually be, you know, have a good gauge to go out with, because I've talked to other states, people in other states that are doing exit polls, and it's really hard for them to do it because they have so many different polling places. So we actually, by, they call them super, was it super polls that she was calling them?
Super precincts.
Super precincts. We actually have an advantage. They were laughing because they viewed that as something that you really wouldn't want. So...
Now, I have a question for you two guys, because we've only got 2 minutes. Are you aware that to have an advocate watch the actual counting, you've got to file paperwork with Joyce Reno ahead of time?
Yes.
They're nodding yes.
Well, one is nodding yes, and one is like...
Huh? Yeah.
We will have.
Yeah. And, they're going back to the other thing you talked about, is the strength of a party system is that the Republicans and the Democrats have people who are willing to do that and know the process to do that and are willing to get involved with that. And way back when, you know, you have to volunteer for that. They choose you and then go through the training and everything like that. So you have to have some people involved.
Well, those are judges.
Yeah, but you also have to have John talked about, is to file the paperwork so they're there and the reason of it. But let's go back to a basic principle here. And it's bigger than Chaffee County. It's the United States and what we have valued. And that is our ability to vote. If the American public lose their confidence in government about their votes, with corruption, the butterfly ballot in Florida, which decided a presidential election, if people start losing their confidence in that, then we'll really lose, and very quickly, because someone then can control. And it is surprising to me. If one of the things that I've learned in this election is how many young people aren't registered to vote, and they don't understand how important it is.
Oh, that surprised me to no end in 2006.
Yeah.
And I begged people to go register to vote, and most of them all said, you know, you're right.
Well, you know, when it comes to voting across party lines, you have to understand, one of the things I always tell people is know what you believe and why you believe it. Not because your parents are Democrats or Republicans or independents, or because your parents were Christians or Muslims or something else. Why do you believe what you believe? Have you read it? Do you understand it? Is that your opinion, or is it somebody else's opinion? And I think I'm a Republican. I've been a Republican my whole life. I have voted for Democrats because I thought they were the best possible hope for that particular office. And I typically agree more, like you say, with the Republican side of things than the Democratic side, because the parties have changed so much over the years. We're running out of time. We're out of time, actually.
We're out of time.
But anyway,
but
vote
your thought, Jeff.
Well, vote your conscience. Vote your conscience. Look at the individual candidate and vote for the right person, not the right party. Vote for the person that's going to do the job, not just somebody that you hope does the job.
And by the way, if you want to volunteer for exit polling, you can call Melody Hallett at 539-4659. And did you want to put out your number at all, Jay?
Yeah, you can call me at 221-3803. That's 221-3803.
221-7198. All right, and everyone, we are out of time, and they get mad at me when I don't do what I'm supposed to do. I would like to thank my co-hosts, Jay DeMay and Melody Hallett, and our candidates for commissioner, Frank Holman and Dennis Geese.
Thanks for having us.
I wish you a lot of luck, and you'd be surprised how many people actually listen to me. Of course, they're waiting for me to put my foot in my mouth.
They listen, but they.
Yeah, which I've done. And I want to say that the views expressed on this program were those of myself and or my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And you have been listening to KHENLP 106.9 in Salida, Colorado. Good night, everyone.